everyone. This is Craig Brown from the National Cotton Council office in Memphis, Tennessee. We're getting ready to begin the Mid-South webinar. We're going to mute everyone's phone from this location so that if you have questions, as per the instructions on the previous screen, you can type them into the chat room on your computer, and you can type them at any time, and we will try to get to all the questions during the course of the presentation. But you won't be able to ask questions orally. This type of webinar doesn't facilitate that. So we'll begin here just in a few minutes. We'll let a few more people get on board. But remember, once we get started, we will mute everybody's phone, and you can ask questions through the chat room.
The conference is in lecture mode.
Well, for those just joining the call, this is Craig Brown with the National Cotton Council in Memphis, Vice President of Producer Affairs. It's a pleasure to welcome you to the Mid-South webinar session for the STACS SBO and Farm Bill implementation presentation. Hopefully everyone can see their screen, and as I mentioned before at the beginning, you will not be able to ask questions orally, but have the opportunity to type questions in to the chat room, and we will get to your questions in the course of the presentation. So let's begin. As most of you are already aware, the 2014 Farm Bill contained many fundamental changes in cotton safety net. The direct and countercyclical payment programs are discontinued for cotton and for all other commodities as well. There's a greater reliance on crop insurance products, especially for upland cotton. All program commodities are covered commodities, plus cotton continued the marketing loan program. But across commodity lines, growers are going to face with new program choices, both in the crop insurance field and in FSA programs. This farm bill is being phased in over 2 years. The principal application of this program will be for the 2014 crop, but particularly the crop insurance provisions will be implemented in the 2015 crop. Unless otherwise noted, the budget sequestration applies to all FSA programs, but does not apply to crop insurance, indemnities, or subsidies. By now, you should be aware that there is being paid out what is called a CTAP payment, a Cotton Transition Assistance Payment. That's a transition payment for upland cotton for the 2014 crop, because STACS and all the other crop insurance changes are not available until 15, Congress authorized a transition payment for upland cotton. It equates to 5.4 cents per pound on all your 2013 base acres and is paid on the direct payment yield. It has a separate $40,000 payment limitation. That's separate from any other payment limitation in this farm bill. And the payments should have started going out after October 1st. We're hopeful that all of you who are eligible for payments have been able to get those payments by now. If you haven't, you probably need to talk to your FSA office. So let's begin the presentation by concentrating on the crop insurance products, and we'll start with STACS. STACS is a is an acronym for the STACS Income Protection Plan. It's a new revenue insurance product available starting with the 2015 crop for purchase on all acres planted to upland cotton. It's administered by the USDA Risk Management Agency, and it can only be purchased as with any other crop insurance product through licensed crop insurance agents. You cannot purchase stacks or any other crop insurance products at the FSA office. Indemnities for stacks are triggered by the revenue experience at the county level, or in some cases where counties are combined to equate actuarial soundness. Stacks indemnities are not based and are not influenced by the individual experience on your form. Stacks is offered by practice. It's offered on an irrigated and non-irrigated practice to the greatest extent possible. This slide demonstrates the comparison of stacks to a regular revenue coverage product. On the left-hand side of your screen, you see a typical product, crop insurance buy-up product, has a certain level of deductible, and an individual coverage is covered below the deductible. Stacks also have a deductible. It's a 10% deductible. It's based, again, as I said, on the county experience. The range in coverage for stacks is from 90% to 70%. So if the county revenue is greater than 90%, then there is no stacks indemnity. If it falls somewhere between that range, there's an indemnity. And of course, if the county revenue is at or below 70%, there's a maximum stacks indemnity paid out to whoever purchases the product. This slide shows a basic example of a calculation for a stacks indemnity. It's comprised of three basic compilations. The first, you calculate the expected county revenue, which is equal to the insurance projected price times the expected county yield. In our example, we made a projected price of 65 cents per pound. In this example, the expected county yield is 1,000 pounds. Therefore, the expected county revenue is $650. Then you got to calculate the actual county revenue, which is equal to the insurance harvest price times the actual county yield. And in our example, you can see that the insurance harvest price dropped to 60 cents per pound. The actual county yield was only 850 pounds, so the actual county revenue was $510. Then to calculate the indemnity, it equates the lesser of the amount that is 90% of the expected county revenue exceeds the actual county revenue, or 20% of the expected county revenue. So 90% of the expected county revenue is $585. The maximum revenue, which is 20% of the expected county revenue, equates to $135. But in this case, the actual indemnity, which is the difference between 585 and 510, equates to 75. And since 75 is lesser than 135, the indemnity in this example would be $75 per acre. Let me add before I go any further that this entire presentation, including the audio, will be available on the council's website, www.cotton.org, and including the audio and all the slides for each region. So this Mid-South presentation, as soon as we can get it put up on our website, is available to anyone who would like to listen to it or listen to it again. Let's move on. The next area we'll talk about is the availability of stacks to upland cotton producers. By law, stacks will be offered in all counties in which the underlying cotton crop insurance products are offered. That equates to about 700 counties in the Cotton Belt. It's offered at a county-specific level to the greatest extent possible. We'll talk about that more in just a minute. If the county does not have enough acres or producers for actuarial soundness, then your county or that county may be combined with other counties. Here's an example of what a primary county or standalone county is. RMA has set the following criteria for a county to be considered a standalone or primary county. Basically, it must have 10 plus years of history of upland cotton, 10,000 acres or more in the past 5 years, and 20 or more producers in the past 5 years. The actuarial offer will include field history and final yields of only that county by practice, and some room for judgment on for counties that missed the criteria by a small amount. RMA estimates that 80% of the cotton-producing acres will fall in this primary county designation. Now, if your county does not meet one or more of these criteria, it may be joined or may be designated as a proxy county. And in this example, you can see that the proxy county is adjoined to a primary county. The proxy county is combined with the primary county, so the experience for the tax indemnity will be the combination of the experience in both counties. Now, the primary county experience still stands alone. It is not influenced by the proxy county, so it still stands on its own merit, but the proxy county will have a combined experience of both counties in this case. Again, RMA estimates that an additional 7 to 8% of the acres will be included when you add the proxy county designation. If the proxy county designation doesn't work, then RMA went to what is called a circle group, and it's just what the name implies, a circle of counties around a primary county. And again, the total experience in this circle group would be used to calculate the indemnity for growers in these circle counties. Again, it would not affect the primary standalone county. Again, they estimate that this adds yet another 7 to 8% of the acres. And in very rare circumstances, when the circle group doesn't work, they go to a double circle or a NASH crop reporting district designation. That would be very much the fringe counties, and this would be by practice. So you could definitely have a county where there's not much irrigation be a primary county for a standalone county for non-irrigated, and may have to be grouped with a proxy county or a circle group for irrigated. There's a lot of examples of that, and we'll talk about that. And finally, there's the last group is what's called outliers. And in this case, these are the real fringe cotton-producing counties with a small number of producers or acreage. And particularly where this is applicable is in an area, particularly in the southeast, in North Carolina and Virginia, where there was very few irrigated producers in a principally non-irrigated state. And because there were so few irrigated producers, the whole state was designated as non-irrigated, so an irrigated producer in that state would buy a non-irrigated policy. So if you want to know what your county has designated, RMA has a website, and it's cited right here at the bottom of the screen, where you can actually go in and put your county's name and see where your county is designated, whether it's a primary, proxy, whatever. RMA will reevaluate these groupings on a periodic basis, probably not every year, but depending on what happens with shifts in cotton production, the number of producers growing cotton, may change a county's designation, and obviously that affects the area for which the indemnity is calculated. So if you can go to this site and check where you are, but again, 80 to 90% of the counties in the cotton belt are going to be standalone or proxy counties. The next big component is the determination of yields, and this is obviously a very critical calculation because this is a basic component of the stacks indemnity. The expected and actual yields for stacks are based on crop insurance data. They are not calculated off of NASH data, which was one of the drawbacks from the group risk coverage products in the past. As we said, it allows for practice-specific data in more areas. It enables aggregation into larger groups. There are two ways to calculate the RMA yields for area plans. They are based on what is called a trend yield by practice. And the trend yield, some exceptional years, whether they're high or low, can be given less weight when calculating the projected yield. The law also provides that when you compare the trend yield to the most recent five-year Olympic average, you take the higher of the two. So you would only use the Olympic average if it's higher than RMA's projected trend yield. This slide just shows you a correlation of Nass County yields and crop insurance yields by practice. And you see they're highly correlated, but we believe that it was a good choice for RMA to use its own data. It's more reliable data, and it ensures that stacks can be offered in virtually every cotton county without concern about whether NAS calculates the data or not. The National Cotton Council has taken this historic RMA data and put it in a more user-friendly format. And you can go to this site at the bottom of this slide on the cotton website and go in and type in that specific information. And then you can pull up the historic county data for your county. And this will be very important in you evaluating kind of what the past history has been in your county, how your yields stack up to the county yields, which may influence which crop insurance products you purchase. So we hope that this will be a much more user-friendly format. It's also available on the RMA site, but we believe that this database that you see down here at the bottom of this slide will be much more user-friendly in evaluating the average yields for your county for stacks and SCO. Now, let's talk about the choices that a grower may have concerning stacks. As with other revenue products, producers have the choice to include or exclude what is called the harvest price option. The harvest price option allows that if the harvest price is above the projected price, then the harvest price option will indemnify yield losses at the higher harvest price. You will probably note that in other revenue products, a product is actually quoted generally with that includes the harvest price option. And the majority of products are usually sold with the harvest price option. But when you're going in and evaluating stacks, you're going to see two choices. You're going to see a stacks revenue protection that includes the harvest price option, or you can opt to exclude the harvest price option from the revenue protection. But this is just another choice that you'll have in determining your stacks product. The coverage band is the maximum coverage band, as I said earlier, is 90 to 70% with a 10% deductible. But you're not required to purchase the whole 90 to 70 band. Both the upper and lower end of the range are adjustable in 5% increments. So you can buy any combination from 70 to 90, or 90 to 70 in 5% increments. And as you can see from all these various combinations, there's 10 or so different coverage combinations that you can purchase. Each one of those will come with a varying rate depending upon the level of risk. The higher level of coverage, generally the more expensive the rate. But you have a lot of options and a lot of choices to consider when considering stacks. Likely, you'll want to choose the 90 to 70 to full width because of the value of that coverage. But it may be your option. It's your option certainly to make any adjustments or whatever combination that you think best fits your risk management plan. Another feature that is offered as part of stacks, as with other existing area-wide insurance products, is called the protection factor. And the protection factor allows you to choose in 1% point increments between 80 and 120% of the indemnity. Under a 90-70 stacks policy, the protection factor doesn't change when an indemnity is triggered. I still must have a 10% county loss and a county revenue loss. But the protection factor will adjust any indemnity up or down by 20% based on the selected factor. It increases the liability, and it also comes with an increased premium. But we think it's a very favorable feature, and it's probably one you'll want to take advantage of to maximize your stacks experience. Here's an illustration of how the protection factor would work, and you see the various levels of stacks protection, and you can see the range. If you have if you pick the 120% protection factor, instead of being indemnified at $120, in this case, your indemnity would go up to $140. Likewise, if you wanted to lessen your protection, get a cheaper policy, and instead of $120, you could go down to 80%. It would be a cheaper policy, but obviously offer less protection. Now, probably the number one concern and the number one factor in determining the value of stacks and how stacks fits in to your risk management plans is to view the liability and the premiums. RMA has released, as we said, the expected yields for all counties, and we told you where to find those, but current yields as well as the historic yields. And they've also published premium rates, a range of premiums, but however, since this is a revenue policy, the rates published go across a range of price volatility factors. The examples that we show, you're going to assume a 1.5 price volatility factor, because that was the price volatility factor last year and kind of what we expect it to be this year, but we won't know that until we get into the price discovery period. In most areas of the Cotton Belt, that's the average December close between January 15th and February 14th. Other areas have a different discovery period, but that's generally the main price discovery period for most of the Cotton Belt. You can actually find the actuarial information on a browser at RMA website, and again, this is the site for that. And again, as I said, all these slides will be available on our website, so you don't have to worry about frantically writing down all these web addresses. All that information is going to be available on our website very soon after we finish this presentation. This slide gives you an idea of what the range in premium subsidies for crop insurance products are. As we said, stacks has the highest level of premium subsidy of any crop insurance product. It is at 80%, so conversely, a producer would only pay 20% of whatever the actual premium is. You can see that when compared to other types of basic or optional coverage at the different levels of coverage, or enterprise units at the different levels of coverage, or even the area-wide yield revenues. So again, by law, stacks premium subsidy is locked in at 80%. We've calculated some examples of some premium calculations for various counties in the Mid-South for both irrigated and non-irrigated. Again, we've had to make some assumptions as we did in the basic example. This example is for Duncan County in Missouri, showing an irrigated and non-irrigated category. Again, you see the projected price of 65 cents. You see the expected yield for Duncan County for next year for irrigated is 1,073 pounds, for non-irrigated 781. You see the calculation of the expected revenue, the 90% expected revenue when you take off the 10% deductible. The maximum indemnity, we assume the 1.2% protection factor is $167 for irrigated, $167 per acre for irrigated, $122 for non-irrigated. This is the premium rate for dollar of coverage on line 6, calculating a total premium of $44 for irrigated, $41 for non-irrigated, but when you factor that by the 20% that a producer is liable for, then $10 an acre for irrigated and $8 an acre for non-irrigated. If we look at another example in Mississippi County, Arkansas, going through the same types of calculations, some of the same assumptions, the only thing different is the expected county yields for Mississippi County irrigated yields, 1,044, 828 for dry land. The producer premium is about the same, $9 for both, which is a little unusual that they'd be the same for irrigated and non-irrigated. Another example, in Tennessee, we picked Madison County. You see the yield differences for irrigated and non-irrigated. Producer premium there, $7 for irrigated, $10 for non-irrigated. We picked Washington County in Mississippi. Pretty much the same, pretty close to the same, premium, a little bit higher on non-irrigated, $7 and $11 respectively. And again, all these examples will be included in the posting on our website. Ouachita Parish in Louisiana, and bring back to Louisiana, I did know that it's a parish and not a county. I'm originally from Louisiana. And again, a little bit higher rates in Ouachita, somewhat unexpected, $11 for irrigated, $10 for non-irrigated. Again, some lower yields, irrigated and non-irrigated yields. So that's just an example, gives you an example of what some premium rates that you might be faced with, representative rates in these counties. All these rates are published for each county. And again, it'll depend upon the volatility factor once the price calculation period is determined. This slide gives you a comparison of experience in Ouachita yields, kind of what the variability is between irrigated and non-irrigated yields, and you see the correlation, the relationship between irrigated and non-irrigated. The blue is irrigated, the red is irrigated for Ouachita. This gives you a historical example in Ouachita of when indemnities would have been paid historically. It assumes a 90 to 70 maximum stacks with the 120% protection factor. You can see in 2008, it would have triggered about $170 estimated in irrigated, about a little less than 150 for non-irrigated, a little bit less in 2009. Estimates are it wouldn't have triggered in 2010, but it would have triggered pretty big in 2011, particularly for the non-irrigated. 2012, less of a chance of triggering. We don't have 2014 on here. The chances are, because of the wide price variance from the strike price to what we think the harvest price is going to be, the price factor alone likely would have triggered an indemnity if we had it available in 2014. Obviously, you can't rest on historical examples, but this does give you some perspective of if stacks would have been in place since 2008, what the application would have been. Same set of examples in Washington County, Mississippi, and you can see where and in the years in which it would have triggered. Pretty close to Louisiana is what you would expect. Here's Madison County, Tennessee. Again, in all these cases, 2011 would have been the biggest year that it would have triggered. Mississippi County, Arkansas, following the same trend. And back up to Duncan County, Missouri, not quite as often, but again, 2011 would have been the big year if we'd had stacks in place. Now, let's talk about stacks and the underlying coverage, because it's as stacks implies, the acronym implies, it's stacked income protection, and it's designed to be stacked on top of underlying coverage. Not required, but it provides for a stacked level of coverage. It's really the first time that RMA has authorized double insurance, if you will, double coverage on the same acre for stacks and for SCO. be a complement to existing coverage. However, and this may have application in the Mid-South, particularly where the level of crop insurance participation has not been that high, you can actually purchase stacks as a standalone policy only with no underlying coverage. You can combine it with CAT coverage or existing buy-up coverage. You can even combine it with group risk policies, what are called ARPI products, if they're offered in your particular county or parish. So you can combine stacks with many levels of coverage. Now, it's important for to note that the lower band of stacks coverage may not overlap the coverage level of another insurance policy on that same acre. So in the case where you might be insuring your cotton acreage at a 75-100 policy, if you maintain the 75-100 coverage, then stacks would start at 75 and go up to 90. So you can't in effect double dip on the coverage. So you would have a choice to make whether to lower your buy-up coverage down to 70 and take stacks on a county experience for the upper level coverage, or you may want to maintain the higher level of coverage on your buy-up and just start stacks at the higher level. And here's an example, an illustration of what that looks like. You see the maximum coverage, the underlying coverage, uncovered range depending on your level of buy-up, and the amount of stacks coverage you would have depending upon your level of buy-up. So if you do have higher levels of buy-up coverage, something over 70%, I doubt that anyone probably has coverage higher than 80% just because of the cost. Although with enterprise units, 75-100 and 80-100 may be feasible for your operation depending on the experience in your county. But there are premium savings by taking your coverage back down to 70-100. However, the trade-off is that the stacks coverage is on area-wide coverage versus your individual coverage. So you have to figure out how your individual yield experience correlates with the area-wide experience. Again, another consideration when putting your crop insurance mix together, something you're going to have to discuss very closely with your crop insurance agent. Okay, before we don't see any questions being put into the chat room, so we'll move on to the next level. But again, I would encourage you at any time to type in your questions. We will see them. Everyone will go to see your questions. Don't be concerned that you think it's a simple question, because if you have a question, this is your opportunity to ask it, and we'll do our best to try to give you an answer. Or if we can't, we don't know the answer, then we'll get back with you. Also, I will tell you that once this presentation is on our website, you'll have the ability to email in your questions to a specific site, and then we will try to get back to you with these specific answers. So there'll be plenty of opportunity for you to have get your questions in there after you maybe heard the presentation and they come to you. We want to make sure to make that available to you. Now, let's move on to another crop insurance option that is available to cotton producers as well as other insured crops. It's called Supplemental Coverage Option. The acronym is SCO. That's how we'll refer to it in this presentation. It's a new product for upland cotton and other crops beginning in the 2015 crop year. Because it is an area-wide product like stacks, it may not be purchased on cotton acres already covered by stacks. So if you have an upland cotton acre and you're trying to decide, you can either purchase stacks on that acre, or you can purchase SCO on that acre, or you can purchase neither, obviously, but you can't purchase both stacks and SCO on the same cotton acre. Now, one of the main differences between SCO and stacks is that for SCO, you must purchase an underlying insurance policy, because the way SCO indemnifies a producer is that it provides coverage for portions a portion of that producer's deductible. Obviously, to have a deductible, you must have an underlying level of coverage. The indemnities are triggered on a county yield or revenue, depending upon the underlying coverage that you have. The SBO deductible is a little bit higher than STAC's. Remember, STAC's was 10%. The SBO deductible is 14%. So for SBO, an indemnity is triggered if the county yield or revenue falls below 86% of the expected yield or revenue. And then the percent by which the county yield or revenue falls below that 86% determines the indemnity that is adjusted based on the value of the producer's individual indemnity. In other words, it reduces the deductible on your policy by basically the percentage of loss or allowable loss in the county. So if a county had a loss of down to 76%, then basically that 10% adjustment applies to your deductible. SBO coverage extends coverage down to the coverage level of the underlying policy. So if the loss is big enough, it can actually cover your full deductible of your... the premium subsidy for SBO is a little bit higher. It's higher than... it's lower than STAC. The subsidy for STAC is 80%. The premium subsidy is a little bit lower. It's 65% for SBO. Here's a chart to kind of give you to kind of summarize the comparisons between STACs and SBO. The first category, underlying coverage required for SBO, yes. For STACs, not necessary. They're both on an area-wide trigger. SBO is either based on yield or revenue, depending on what your individual policy is. The deductibles are different, 14% for SBO, 10% for STACs, 10% minimum for STACs, depending on which range of STACs coverage you pick. The coverage band caps out at 70% for STACs, but can go down to your level of underlying coverage for SBO. As we just said, the premium subsidies are 65% for SBO and 80% for STACs. The indemnity is paid for SBO on the percent of the individual deductible. For STACs, is paid on the county shortfall adjusted by the protection factor. So what are some of the key questions that you need to discuss with your insurance agent on determining whether or not you should go with SBO or STACs? One question is to compare, is your individual ABH well above the expected county yield? In other words, if you're well above the county norm, you may want to take a harder look at SBO. Is your underlying coverage less than 70%? In other words, do you have a pretty wide deductible that may be able to be covered more so with SBO than with STACs? And remember that both of them work off of an area-wide experience, county experience, 90 and 86% respectively. Here's an example of kind of a comparison of stats, and we're going to go through a number of these for various Mid-South counties. Here's an example of a comparison between stats and SBO at different levels of coverage for Dunklin County. You can see that the projected price, which we assume to be 65 cents again, is the same. The county yields the same because for SBO, we're using RMA data, again, the same data that's used to determine the county averages for STACs, so they're consistent. The trigger levels are going to be different because of the deductibles, $628 for STAC because it has a 10% deductible, $600 for SBO because it has a 14% deductible. You calculate the maximum indemnities. You see for STAC it's $167. For SBO it's at 70% coverage, $112 because you don't have that big a coverage gap on your happens with the SCO indemnity. Here are the premium rates for Duncan County, for irrigated stacks, irrigated SCO at 70 and irrigated SCO at 6,100. Again, the producer premiums, and this is an interesting comparison, because even with the different level of premium subsidies, you see the comparison. They're fairly close as far as the producer premium is concerned for stacks, SCO, and 70 and SCO 60. Here's the same example in Duncan County, but for non-irrigated. Again, you see the premiums are pretty close to the same. It's probably because there's not much non-irrigated in Duncan County. Here's the examples from Mississippi County. The premiums, producer premiums, virtually the same as in Duncan County. You see the expected, the maximum indemnities are comparable. Non-irrigated in Mississippi County, again, falling in that $9 to $10 to $11 range. Madison County, Tennessee, cheaper policies, but your maximum indemnities are a little bit lower. Not a lot, but a little bit. Non-irrigated, they bump up in Madison County toward a higher range, with ranging from $10 to $14 for stacks versus SCO 60. Washington County come back down into that cheaper range, $6 to $7. Maximum indemnities range from $160 to $174. Back from $107 to $174. Non-irrigated, they go back up into that $11 to $12 range. See the maximum indemnities come down because of the lower yield. Wichita Parish, higher premium ranges. Again, this is a little bit odd, something that we may have to take a look at in the future. Higher premium, the higher range for irrigated, and cheaper for non-irrigated, which is a little strange to understand. So that's something that might need to be looked at. But these are the rates that are going to be basically in effect for the 2015 crop. Now, in addition to SCO, there are some other enhancements that came about in the Farm Bill to the Crop Insurance Act. One is it made permanent the practice of enterprise units, and it made permanent the subsidy of 80% premium subsidy. It also provided for producers to segregate irrigated units by practice. So you can buy an irrigated enterprise or non-irrigated enterprise units, which was not the case previous years. In addition, it allows for different levels of coverage by practice for any crop insurance product. Heretofore, you'd have to have the same level of coverage depending if you had two different practices. Now you can differentiate your levels of coverage based on your practice, which is a very positive change. Allows you to customize your crop insurance risk depending on what practice you're using on your farm and how much investment you have in the crop. Another big change, and one that we weren't quite sure was going to be implemented for 15 but was decided very late, but it will, is an adjustment in APH insurable yields. This provision allows a producer the option of excluding any year from his APH calculation if the yield in the county in that year is less than 50% of a 10-year county average. If your county, if you're in that county and that trigger hits, the same ability applies to any producer in any contiguous county. It also allows for the separation of irrigated and non-irrigated acres in all the counties that are covered. Now, we currently don't have all the details yet on how the APH adjustment is going to be implemented, how many years you can drop, what the rate, and more importantly, what the rates are going to be. RMA expects to have those details coming out sometime later this month. It's a mass profit calculation. For those of you who are growing peanuts, there's a new peanut revenue coverage. Another important change that applies to crop insurance, and this is kind of a cross back to farm programs, starting in 2016, you must be in basic conservation compliance to be eligible for any insurance premium subsidy. So therefore, if you've been in conservation compliance on your FSA farm programs in the past farm bill, carried over into this farm bill, basically, you didn't sod bust or swamp bust, you have a conservation plan if you're on highly erodible land, you didn't convert any property into wetlands, the basic requirements for conservation, then you'll be okay on your crop insurance premium subsidies. I would caution you, though, if you're farming some ground that has never been in a farm program, you need to make sure that you're also in conservation compliance starting for 2016. This FSA form, AD 1026, must be filed with the FSA office no later than June 1st of next year, which designates that you're in conservation compliance. So to be eligible for crop insurance premium subsidies for 2016, make sure you get that form filed at your FSA office by June 1st of next year. Okay, I'm still looking at the chat room, and nobody's been brave enough to ask any questions yet. Or maybe the presentation is such you haven't needed to ask any questions. I'm going to assume that. But seriously, I would encourage you to type in your questions, no matter what they are, because I think it'll probably be a benefit to everyone else. On the webinar. We're getting ready to switch to off of crop insurance and talk about some FSA farm program issues. This is particularly important to mid-south producers who raise, who are very diversified in their production and probably will be participating in the farm programs for the other covered commodities. There's some very key decision dates that the growers need to keep in mind when making decisions about various aspects of FSA farm programs. By February 27th of next year, landowners must decide whether to retain or reallocate the covered commodity basis. Again, covered commodities are your basic program commodities, except for cotton. Cotton is not a covered commodity. You have the opportunity to retain the basis that you had at the end of 2013, or reallocate those bases based on recent planting history and the procedures laid out in the Farm Bill as to how you can reallocate those commodity bases. Also, you have the opportunity to update your payment yields, particularly for our PLC programs. And this is a very important provision. Most of the program yields, the old countercyclical payment yields under the previous farm bills, have probably not been updated since probably 2002. And if you have a history that you can show the more recent yields for these covered commodity crops, it certainly behooves you to update those payment yields. That is the direction, the responsibility of the landowner. However, we have learned that if a tenant holds an all-encompassing power of attorney, where it designates all programs and all decisions, we believe that FSA will allow the tenant to make the base retention or reallocation and payment yield on behalf of the landowner. Likewise, by March 31st of next year, every producer and landowner must agree on whether or not to enroll the base acreage on their farm in the price loss coverage option or the ARC option on a farm-by-farm, commodity-by-commodity basis. It's critically important that you make this decision. It's important that everyone makes the same decision for each of the crop bases on your farm, You can make different decisions for different crop bases on different farms, but everyone must agree on the decision for each crop base by farm. There is a penalty for not agreeing or not signing or not making the designation, and it's fairly severe. The penalty is that you're ineligible for any program benefits for 2014, and the default becomes PLC for all the crop bases starting in 2015. So it's really critical that the tenants get together with the landowner. Again, if you have power of attorney for the landowner, you can make those decisions. But it's critically important that all the decision makers get together and agree on the designations for those crop bases. And even when you do all of those two things, make those two choices, the base and yield decision and the PLC or ARC decision, you still have to go back in and sign up for the programs. And sometime by the summer of 15, you'll be able to sign up for the 14 to 15 crop bases. Payments for the 2014 PLC and ARC payments will not be made any sooner than October of 2015. So that's a fairly significant gap in timing. Payment acres equate for covered commodities to the 85% of the sum of the base acres for each covered commodity and any generic base attributed to the covered commodity. We found in all of our meetings, both the early round and the latest round of meetings, that generic base seems to be somewhat of a confusing provision. It's a very generous provision. It's one that allows quite a bit of planting flexibility by growers as far as program participation. What generic acres simply are, acres are designated generic that were cotton base acres on the farm in 2013. If you had cotton base acres on the farm at the end of 2013, based on the 2008 Farm Bill, you now have generic base acres on the farm in this new Farm Bill. And the beauty of generic base acres are that any covered commodity planted on the farm are first attributed to the generic base and increase the payment acres for that particular crop base for that year. You can't exceed the generic base acres as far as getting additional payment acres. If you plant more than one covered commodity, there's a formula for devising and splitting out the attribution to the various program bases. But it's a very good provision. It's one that gives you a lot of planting flexibility for program participation. And that's what this slide basically covers, that is based on the cotton base in 2013. Here's an example. This is our famous 200-acre farm example. We've about probably worn out this poor farm on using it to calculate, to demonstrate generic base. But you see in this very basic example that this farm had 200 acres of base in 2015, 100 of it was generic, 100 of it, in this case, was wheat. In 2015, this particular producer planted 100 acres of cotton and 100 acres of wheat, so he planted the entire farm. And so the question is, how much wheat base or how much wheat payment acres does this farm have in 2015? And since I can't see a show of hands to answer the question, I'll give you the answer because it's right there on the screen. It's 200 acres. It equates, and the 200 acres is comprised of the 100 acres that he had as wheat base and the fact that he planted an additional 100 acres that was attributed to the generic base. So this farm for 2015 effectively has 200 acres of wheat payment acres. The payment acres are 85% of that, or 170 acres. So I see everybody nodding their head that they understand that example. And you can take it from there and figure out the combination of covered commodities. But again, generic base gives you a lot of planting flexibility as far as other program crops. Another provision, and this is really the only provision in the cotton program that's still applicable to FSA, we maintain the cotton marketing loan. There's a new formula in the Farm Bill of a range of calculations. The important thing for you to know is that the loan rate for the 2015 crop has been set. It's maintained at 52 cents per pound. The other important factor is that now this Farm Bill includes marketing loan gains and LDPs under the all-encompassing payment limitation. And that is presenting marketing challenges and eligibility challenges down the road that every segment of the industry is concerned about. Well, let's jump the payment limits, because that's where this concern is multiplied. There is a new payment limit provision in this Farm Bill. It's quite a bit higher than the old Farm Bill, the previous Farm Bill. It's $125,000 per entity. That includes any PLC or ART payments, but it also includes marketing loan gains and LDPs, which is a big change from the 08 Farm Bill. There is a separate $125,000 limit for peanuts. This payment limit has no application to crop insurance indemnities. And here's the problem. Growers, if a cotton producer has any marketing loan gains applied to his redemption of cotton, which may be in a pool situation with a Farm G loan or an equity contract, or what's called an option to purchase contract with a merchant, both the pool and the merchant have control over the redemption of that cotton and the application and how much of that marketing loan gain goes against your limit. Unfortunately, USDA does not have a timely way of keeping track of how much marketing loan gain is going against a particular individual's payment limit. Their computer systems just do not convert that attribution very easily. Eventually, it will be attributed back to a producer's payment limit. And ultimately, if you have a large marketing loan gain application, it could affect whether you're eligible for any PLC or ART payments, or it could actually obviously reduce the amount of PLC or ART payments that you would have available. And you probably won't know that probably until sometime around October of next year, unfortunately. We're working as best we can with USDA to try to streamline the process. We've outlined what we're doing and the steps that we're taking in a briefing paper that is part of this presentation that you can pull up on our website to kind of give you an idea of where this issue stands. In addition to a different payment limit provision, there's a new means test provision in this Farm Bill. The new means test provides that the three-year average AGI, and this is now total AGI, is not broken down between farm and non-farm. Total AGI exceeds $900,000, the three-year average, then you become ineligible for PLC or marketing loan gains or LDPs. There is a new procedure for AGI certification and verification. It is very important and critical for application of any of the farm programs and loan redemptions or any other aspect of the program that a producer have on file at his FSA office, CCC Form 941. This is the self-certification form that says you're not impacted by the 900,000 AGI means test. As a new part of the procedure, FSA is sending this information to IRS to verify that you're not ineligible. This has initially presented some loan redemption difficulties from co-ops and merchants. So eventually it will be sent to IRS for verification, but the procedure has been modified to allow timely redemptions of loans by individuals merchants or cooperatives. So it's not slowing down the redemption process. But it is, again, very critical that a producer have on file that 941 form. That brings us very much to the end of our presentation. Here's a list of some resources that you can take advantage of. The Texas A&M Ag and Food Policy Center has a somewhat complex but very good tool to help in your decision process, particularly on farm program choices. It also has a crop insurance module that may be useful to you. Similarly, there's a tool at the University of Illinois. RMA has a farm bill page that goes over all the crop insurance changes that apply to the Crop Insurance Act. Likewise, there's an FSA website that has details of the farm program provisions. There have been many information meetings around the country, both Extension and others conducting information meetings. We encourage you to go to as many information meetings as you can. As I said, we're available to answer questions, particularly on the crop insurance side of it. But I would point out to you that it's really important that you have a good working relationship with your crop insurance agent for the crop insurance products. They're the ones who you're going to have to work with to fashion your crop insurance mix. It's important that you work with a knowledgeable agent. It's important that you know the type of questions on which to ask your agent so that together y'all can maximize your insurance coverage. There's a lot of new products available. There's a lot of new combinations available. And all these choices will have to be made before the sales closing date for the 2015 crop. I still don't see any questions. So if you've got a question, type it in now, and we'll be happy to answer it. Or if you think of a question later, send it in at info@cotton.org, info@cotton.org, and it'll get to the right person, and we'll do our best to give you a full answer as we understand it. Again, I don't see anybody typing, so I hope that means that you understood the presentation and not that you're afraid to ask questions. We do appreciate your participation in this webinar. This is kind of a new process for us, and we hope that it's successful. If it is, we'll continue to use it to get information out to everyone. Again, this presentation and all the webinars will be available on our website very soon, including the audio. So you can hear my presentation and the slides that go with it on our website, www.cotton.org. And again, I don't see anyone typing, so I appreciate your time and your attention, and wish you a good day. This session is over.